Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. American, all the chips in the PC. It is Saturday, the 8th day of May, Anno Domini 2021. And you, you lucky people, you're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And it's 7 minutes after the hour. We are going to be bringing you news, views, things to choose, nothing to lose. Kick off your shoes. Don't get the blues. Here comes the news. Don't get the blues, but you can listen to the blues.
Yeah.
On Jazz and Blues Radio, there streaming online at jazz901.org. Okay, if you found your system running unexpectedly short of storage space over the last couple of days.
When I saw this story,
yeah,
it's like, and they wonder why I don't trust them?
Yeah. Well, it's a bug in Windows Defender that could be to blame. Some users report that the bug has led to hundreds of thousands or even millions of files being generated by the Windows Defender security software, taking up gigabytes of storage space. The problem affects systems that use Windows Defender as the default security solution and appears to be caused by engine version 18100.5. The problem has reportedly been addressed in 18100.6. You can check to see which version of Defender you're running, and I'm about to give it to you, but you can also find it on our website, and I'll explain that in a minute. At Settings, Update and Security, Windows Security, Open Windows Security, Settings, About. The files themselves are stored in C, Program Data, Microsoft, Windows Defender, Scans, History, Store, so you should check there to see if you have the issue. One user reported that 4 million files weighing in at over 11 gigabytes were generated overnight on their Windows Server 2019 disks. Other Windows Server versions have been similarly affected. A number of users also report running Sophos, so it's possible that could be contributing to the issue. Another system running Windows 10 version 20H2 saw over 10,800 files created overnight. Aside from updating Defender, the other workaround is to delete the files and turn off real-time protection. But, of course, that may leave your system vulnerable in the meantime. Alternately, you can turn it off entirely and run something else.
Which?
Check the Security Tango for alternatives. So our poll of the week at soundbites.org, that is Bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you, is Windows Defender bug creating thousands of files. Your choices are, it happened to me, that explains a lot, I'll check, no problem here, Windows what now, and other. So far, we've got 29 votes. Windows what now is, of course, number one. But one person said that explains a lot. And, of course, if you have more to say, you should head over on over to our website at soundbites.org. That's Bites with a Y. Francis would like us to remind you. Scroll down on the right under Fascinating Stuff. You'll see the forums. The second forum down is the poll discussion. Currently, at least, the number one item under poll discussion is 8 May 21. Windows Defender bug creating thousands of files. That is also where you will see the two things that I just mentioned. The place the files are being created, the whole long list of C:\Program Data\etc., etc., is listed there, as is how to see which version of Defender you're running. Setting, you open up Windows Defender and go to Settings, Update and Security, Windows Security, blah, 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 blah. So you'll be able to find those things there as well. And, of course, leave us a little comment on how you feel about all of this and what you think. And then and then give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299, toll-free 1-800-790-0415.
And with the trend of computers now coming with fast SSDs, which are generally smaller because they cost more,
right,
running out of disk space again is becoming a big thing.
But we, you know, I have been saying this for decades. Don't use it.
Right.
It's right along there with their virus program. Hello. Even on the Security Tango, we don't recommend just one program to run for spyware and malware. No, we recommend two. Why? Because no one program can do it all. Windows has enough trouble just running Windows.
Yeah.
And keeping it stable so it doesn't crash on you and get the blue screen. If folks go back and remember that, you click on something and boom, you get the blue screen of death. At least they've overcome that. I mean,
mostly.
Yeah. Let them do what they do. Windows. As far as these other peripherals, as far as spyware and malware, and, oh, we'll defend your machine. No.
One advantage it does have, though, is that because it's part of Windows, it's already built into the kernel. It doesn't have to patch the kernel like other AV software, right, which can cause its own problems.
Right.
But if you're responsible enough, you almost don't need any AV software because you don't click on links from in email, you don't go to strange websites, you don't download crazy things. But there's so many drive-by
things.
Even
with the right.
Yeah.
Yeah. But the thing of it is, though, is, again, they don't update it like the other programs that are, maybe built around doing that type of stuff.
Right.
Updated almost daily.
Yeah.
Right.
I mean, Super Antispyware, Malware Bytes, I'm constantly getting notices that there's updates because they're on top of it. Microsoft, maybe every 3-4 months if we're lucky and it'll get into this patch or this update. Yeah, no. Meanwhile, your machine is infected. And, oh, by the way, you've passed it on to other folks if you're emailing them to other people.
On my Windows machine, I update ClamAV. I check update every night for that and for Rootkit Hunter. And Rootkit Hunter doesn't have many updates. But, man, ClamAV is constantly having new things. And, of course, 99.9% of them are really Windows viruses, but it checks for them anyway, so that I don't pass anything on to anybody else.
Mm-hmm.
We've had a couple of people saying that they can't, there's space missing on their hard drives.
Yep.
Yeah.
All of a sudden, this may be the culprit.
There's a program I just thought of. I'm going to write the Mac end.
You're going to write?
I'm going to write down. for Windows called Tree Size.
Right.
And one called for Mac called OmniDisk Sweeper.
Yeah, that Tree Size is a good one.
It will scan all your folder sizes and sort them by the space used.
Right.
You can always go into Windows and right-click on a folder and say Properties.
Right.
Every single folder.
Yeah, right. But this does it automatically. The Tree Size, like you say, I've used that before. And you see some of the folders, and they're gigantuous.
Yep. You do have to be careful because your Windows directory is probably going to be huge and don't delete anything in there.
That's the problem.
Again, don't get click happy. Too many folks, I'll take all this stuff out. No! Right. Look it over.
And there's a great program, a tree size type graphical program for Linux called Baobab, which is a type of tree. So. Baobab, 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 Baobababy, B-A-O-B-A-B, B-A-O-B-A-B.
Doobie-doobie-doo.
Doobie-doobie-doo. B-A-O, B-A-B, B-I-Bicky-Bi, B-O-Bo, Bicky-Bi-Bo, B-U-Boo, Bicky-Bi-Bo-Boo. Sorry. I'm a Three Stooges fan. Get over it.
But going back, though, that's why we've said before, don't rely on Windows to do important stuff, especially protecting your machine. I'm sorry, there's too many other programs you can get out there, free ones and paid ones, that are well worth the money. If your information is that important that you don't want it getting out all over the internet or being hacked and screwing up your machine.
Right.
Quite blunt.
And why not? Okay, let us go to the phones. Our first caller is Bill from Greece, New York. Hiya, Bill. What's up?
Hello, Nick. Happy Mother's Day for all the mothers tomorrow.
Thank you. Is that half a word? Anyway, go ahead.
Yeah, I've got a Windows computer and a couple Linux computers, and I want to be able to put files on a hard drive and be able to copy them from one computer to another, and I'm having troubles.
Okay.
Let's say I want to do my audiobooks. I got an audiobooks folder.
Sure.
And I do a copy and paste to the external hard drive. And then when I go to look for the folders, I've got the audiobooks, I've got the author, and when I open up the author, there's no books in there, even though it says there is. Once I disconnect and connect back up, there's nothing in the folder. Is there some kind of a limit to how deep you can copy and paste?
Well, it depends on the file system on the flash drive. For best compatibility, the flash drive should be formatted FAT32.
Right.
And there's a limit of 100 or 99 items at the root of the library, and I think it's 99 folders deep.
Flash drive is XFAT.
Yeah, XFAT is better, but then both your Linux and Windows have to be new enough to recognize the XFAT volume, which if it's recent, then it is, yeah.
New enough. They recognize it. It's just when I try to copy and paste, by the time it gets down to the third folder, and I even went got a software program that's supposed to do the copy and paste for you and remember if it misses anything, and it shows up that it's copied and pasted, but then when I turn off the computer and plug it back in to check it, there's nothing in the third folder.
Have you tried dragging and dropping rather than copy and paste? It shouldn't make a difference, but maybe it does.
No, I think I did once, and that didn't do anything.
That's an interesting problem.
I've actually destroyed three hard drives already, because then when I try to go back and format it, it won't format.
Oh, that's interesting. That's actually very interesting. So you're copying from Windows to Linux?
No. I'm copying from Windows to an external hard drive.
Right. But then you're opening it on Linux.
Well, no. I tried that, and I didn't see anything, and I've gone back into Windows. In fact, yesterday I did it. I got a cheap hard drive and did it again, and just turned off Windows, turned it back on, plugged the hard drive back in, and none of the audiobooks are there. It does the same thing to video files. I've got a lot of video files, and it says that it transfers them, and nothing's there. And it's like I said, I'm on my fourth hard drive now, and I don't want to plug it in because I've already ruined three. Now, one of them, I think, was because it had the BTRF file system, and I don't think that's compatible with anything.
Well, it's not. Yeah. Okay. So let me get this straight. The machine you're copying from is Windows 10. And you're going to some sort of external device.
Yep.
And when you go look, nothing is there.
Well,
at the third level down.
If I look while it's still connected, right after it said it did the copying, it shows up. Now, this copying, this takes like 6 hours because I got so many audiobooks.
Yeah. So if you look while it's copying, it shows up, and then you disconnect it and reconnect it, and they're gone?
Yep.
I do know that Windows, everything from 8.1 on, has had intermittent problems copying subfolders. It could be a naming convention issue.
Yeah.
If a file has certain characters in it, apostrophes, asterisks, slashes.
Yeah, that's the ButterFS system. But
colon.
They can all do that. Colons.
Question mark.
I don't see that in the name that I can see when I open up the file. It's just letters. It's like Agatha Christie, and then you go down and it'll give you the name of the book.
Are there spaces in the name?
Spaces in the name.
Are there?
I don't know. Would that be a no-no?
It could be. It depends on the system you're running and the way it's set up. So let me suggest this. Take a couple of files. We're going to do a test here. Create a directory with just a short name. Then under that, another directory with a short name, and if you want another directory with a short name, and then put a couple of files in there, copy them in, don't move them in, copy them in, and then make those short names, like maximum 5 characters.
Mm-hmm.
Copy those over and see if that goes.
The maximum length of a path in Windows is 260 characters.
Right. Now, I have seen that at times. If you've got a very long title, I've seen audiobooks that say, you know, a tree grows in Brooklyn, dash the author, dash something, dash chapter one, dash file 1 of 33, dash and some number.
Yeah.
And there's 10 folders in front of that.
Yeah. Right.
Then your full path length is too long. So the file name length is okay, but the path length is too long.
Right. So my suggestion of making a test with short path names, the whole idea is to see if that works, then it is likely that whatever system you're using, the path names are too long.
Okay, I'll try that.
Yeah, it's a quick and easy, you know, setup. I mean, just copy the files, like Nick said, to maybe some other subdirectory and rename them. You know, you'll say you've got the folder for all these books. You just created another temp folder. Copy those, books over to there, to your temporary folder. Rename them all with short names. And then do your copying over to the other hard drive.
Right.
Okay, now, like in a second question here, when I go from Linux to Windows, one of my Linux distributions, I've got 3 of them, use the BTRF file system. Is that not compatible with XFAT at all?
It's just a different file system. And
it'll use apostrophes, and XFAT won't understand them, right?
Right. So you want to stick with the you should be able to read and write to XFAT without a problem, no matter what is what format is used on the hard drive of that system.
Even with the BTRFS?
Right.
But each file system may have different restrictions on characters and path length.
So although you can have a file with all kinds of extra characters in BTRF, you really don't want to use them if you don't have to, because then that makes them less portable.
Yeah. Well, I eventually got rid of that system because I was having major problems trying to do any kind of even simple one file copy. It was freezing up the hard drive. Now, if I go and I put this hard drive and I can't get to one of my Linux drives and go back to Windows, Windows comes up and says, there's a problem with this drive. You need to correct it and click here to correct it. Do you know what's causing it?
That could be any one of 1,000 different things, but what there's not enough information for me to be able to tell you what that could. There's 1,000 things it could be. I can't narrow it down.
Once a file is read by Linux, does it get a kind of a tag on it that Windows doesn't understand?
Again, it depends. It depends on a million things, one of which is how you've set up how you've set up Linux. If you've set it up, or it set itself up,
it set up with the XT4 file system.
Yeah, that I do. I've done that many more than one time. The other thing you might try, you're almost definitely going to have to shorten your file names.
Uh huh.
But beyond that, if you can publish a drive from either system to the internet, and then just copy directly from one machine to another, that may work. But again, you gotta shorten those names first. For example, I had that problem many years ago. I had a folder that said something along the lines of Nick's audiobooks, something, something. Under that, I had Longfellow, Henry Wadsworth.
Yep.
Under that, I had some file names. Mm-hmm. And that particular folder would not go until I thought, path size.
Okay, so, that makes sense.
Yeah.
Which is annoying because the file size limit is 256 characters.
Yeah.
The path length limit is 260 characters total.
Right, yeah.
So you can have one long folder inside a very short folder, and that's it.
Right.
Yeah.
So now I you know, my audiobooks folder is called A-Books.
Mm-hmm.
Everything is last name, no comma, no space, and one initial. You know, so now I don't have that problem anymore, but I have had it in the past. Yes.
Yeah, I keep it simple.
Yep.
Okay, thank you very much, guys.
All right, good luck. Yeah, and it's the same thing is true, by the way, when you go.
Jeff?
There we are. We're live. The same thing is true, by the way, when you go to a lot of music programs. When you rip a CD or whatever, you often get odd, unusable characters, or you get really long paths.
Yeah, I've seen iTunes will try to do genre is in a folder, and under that is artists, and under that is albums, and under that is songs, and under that is the song name.
Right.
Trying to keep all those folder names short, so your total path isn't too long.
Right. All right, back to the phones. We're going to stay in Greece, but we're going to go to Jeffrey. How are you, Jeffrey? What's up?
I'm doing well, thank you. About a month ago, my brother laser printer that I've had for a couple of years, and this is my second brother, I've had very good luck with them, started losing Wi-Fi connection on a regular basis. If we're using our desktop PC and send something to the printer, it may or may not work. And all of a sudden it starts connecting to Wi-Fi. And if you happen to be making a copy when it loses connection, the paper jams in the machine. And just constantly losing Wi-Fi. I can lose Wi-Fi 8 or 10 times an hour.
Are you printing all from one machine?
In other words, you got various PCs?
Or does it happen on other machines too?
It happens on Chromebooks. And we seem to have very good luck with the cell phones, but on the Chromebook, same problem. But mainly our heavy-duty machine is the desktop PC. And
that's Windows?
Yes, Windows 10.
I have seen an issue, and I have not been able to track it down because it happens between my wife's Windows 10 machine and my Chromebook and Windows Linux machines. If she prints something, often the machine locks up. It's there. I can do the self test. I can hit self test. I can do all that stuff. I see it on the network. I cannot print to it. I have to turn it off.
Yep.
Turn it back on again, and now I can print, and everything is fine. And half the time she can print, and I can print, and she can print, and I can print. And then every once in a while, once she has printed something,
it jams.
It jams. And I've got a brother printer as well. And I do not know if it's a brother issue or a Windows 10 issue.
Yeah, you describe what we're experiencing exactly.
Yeah, we've had some
hang up. I'll see things hanging up in the print queue.
Yep.
And the only way that I can get out of there is to restart the PC. And then after it starts up, it just gets out.
Yep. All right, listen, stay on the line. We got to take a quick break, but we'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Jeffrey from Greece, and me, Nick Francesco. It is 29 minutes after the hour. You're listening to the longest-running computer show in the known universe. It's Soundbites right here on the Truly Great, and truly grateful to you that we are member-supported Jazz 90.1.
It's America's longest-running computer show. Back to more sound bites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 36 minutes after the hour, we are sound bites, and we're still on with Jeffrey from Greece, New York.
Yeah, I'm still here.
Yeah, at any rate, we're pretty much done. That's a thing I've seen before.
There were a couple of things that we've run into with similar issues. One is, how old is your Wi-Fi router? So we had a customer that had a 10-year-old router. Replace that, problem's gone.
The whole problem started when I got a new Spectrum router, and I decided to trade that one in after a month of dealing with it. And I bought a new TP-Link router, and the problem did not go away.
So that's not it. The other thing, well, as an aside to that, make sure that Spectrum took the modem lease off of your bill. Because yeah,
I decided to keep the modem and just have it hook up to the router.
Well, Charter now charges you extra for Wi-Fi. So if you have your own Wi-Fi router, you don't need to pay for theirs, and you want to make sure it stays off your bill.
Yeah. As it turned out, my Ring doorbell did not get a strong enough signal from the router that I bought. So I doubled them both up. I have one as an access point going into the Spectrum, and now my doorbell and my Wyze cameras work.
That works, yeah. Yep. The other thing we've seen
Are they on different networks, or are they in the same network?
On same network, but different IP address.
Okay, so you've set a limit as to the IP address space.
Yes.
On both.
Yes. Yep.
Okay.
The other thing you can try is in the printer, reset all the network settings. There's a command in there somewhere that will zero all the settings out and then set it back up again to your Wi-Fi. That may help too. And while you're in there, it wouldn't hurt to check for a firmware update.
Yeah.
Okay. I did also uninstall it twice, uninstall the Brother printer, and then reinstall it right from the website.
Also check for any firmware updates for the router that you purchased.
Okay.
In general, for everybody listening, every once in a while, and make it the first of the month. Why not? Check your router, your printer, or any other devices you have for firmware updates.
And if you've never installed any, and there don't happen to be any, get a new router.
Yeah,
because there are always bugs, and they always need updated. And if you never get any updates for your router or your modem or
that's
your whatever,
cause for concern.
That's bad. Yep.
Okay. Do you go into the about link?
It depends on your. It depends on your router.
A lot of them have the feature that you can say check for updates.
But and that's usually under administration or under system. It's usually not on the general, the first page of the
last
screens. Yeah.
Okay.
Great. And often what we've seen on Brother now is a little annoying. It's good they're putting a password on the setup page so that random people can't get into your printer. But then they print the password on the back of the printer. So it's there when you need it, but then you got to crawl around behind the printer and try to find that admin password so you can log in to manage your printer.
Or perhaps you put it in LastPass or EndPass.
Right.
EndPass.
Then you can change it to something you want or put it in your password manager. Yeah.
Okay. Are we good?
We're good. Yes. Thank you very much.
All right. Thanks. Before we go on to the next call, I have to say I was taking a note in Keep for myself to remind me to check my firmware on my printer, because I did that the first and there wasn't one, but
now we're the eighth.
But as I swept over it on my Chromebook, I happened to hit the take dictation button. So everything you said.
Nice.
Got out of here. Pretty funny. Pretty funny.
Did it get it all pretty good?
Yeah, it really did. Yeah, absolutely.
With the ambient mic through the Plexi shield, that's pretty good.
That's pretty darn good. You absolutely want to make sure that all of your devices are as up to date as you can get them. So check every one of your available devices for firmware. Any device that you have, like a printer or a router that has a web capable interface an app for your phone will have a way to check for firmware updates. So you should do that pretty often. And be aware that when you do something like that, that device, A, may take a while to update, and B, will go on and off the network while it's doing it. So do it at a time when, people aren't printing or
in the middle of a web meeting or something else.
Yeah, right. Particularly if it's your router. I went to update my router one day and realized, no, my wife is downstairs playing her game on Facebook. And I would like to sleep with both eyes closed tonight.
There you go.
Wise man. Yep.
Yeah.
So be aware that is something that you're, particularly with the router, something you should do at the end of the day or the beginning of the day if you're the first one.
Or evening, just before you're ready to, call it an evening. Yeah, just Go down and reset everything.
Yep. All right. Well, you give us a call at 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 1-800-790-0415. I'll read another piece of news. Only a week after rolling out major updates for its operating systems, Apple has released patches for iOS, iPadOS, macOS, and watchOS. The company said in support documents that the updates resolve WebKit flaws that may already have been exploited. The issues concerned maliciously crafted web content that may lead to arbitrary code execution. That's the drive-by stuff that we were talking about earlier. Among the problems were a memory corruption issue and integer overflow. How are we still having... On Mac OS and iOS. And buffer overflow, that's even worse. And use after free issues on older iOS devices. To resolve the flaws, Apple has released iOS 14.5.1. iPadOS 14.5.1, macOS Big Sur 11.3.1, and watchOS 7.4.1. Owners of older iPads, iPhones, and iPod Touch devices that don't support recent versions of iOS can download and install iOS 12.5.3 instead. Given that Apple believes the flaws have been actively exploited, it's a good idea to install the updates as soon as possible. How's your Apple's device security? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free, 1-800-790-0415.
And you need to make sure you have enough free disk space on your device before you load the update. And then, actually, you need like double the amount it says. Especially on the iPhones, that they have this unfortunate side effect that, you know, say the update is 4 gigs and you have 4.5 gigs free, well, that's technically enough, but it really isn't.
Yeah.
So it'll often hang during the restart because there's not enough space free to do what it needs to do. So if you don't have enough free disk space and make sure you have a lot of enough free disk space, you can do the update on your computer. So then the updater doesn't have to install on your device because that takes up. So if it's a 4 gig updater, you need, say, 8 gigs of free space,
right?
Because it has to decompress the updater. It has to load everything, and you need extra free space. And we're always running our devices at so close to full as it is.
Yeah. And that's true of both Windows and Linux and every operating system.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you need a lot of additional space to do things.
And that's the way it's been forever. I mean, you know, you always thought, well, I remember when I got my first 300 gig hard drive, I thought, oh, forget it. I'm not even going to come close to filling that. Two weeks later, I'm looking at zip drives trying to figure out how to compress some of this stuff because that filled the space.
Yep, yep.
And we're always doing that. I mean, now that, you know, folks are using their phones and that to take pictures and storing stuff on there and never getting rid of the thousands of emails. I mean, I looked at one person's computer and it's like, oh, Lord.
Yeah.
We've
how, you know, 20 years ago, you still need those emails? I don't think so.
Well, my personal record with a customer is 200,000 messages in the inbox.
In the inbox. Okay.
With 100,000 unread.
There you go.
So at least they've read 100,000 messages in however many years it's been.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
I used to tell my faculty that all the time. You know, we told them they had a strict limit as to the amount of email they could put on our server. They did not. Well, I suppose 32 terabytes.
Yeah.
That's how much disk we say.
That is a limit.
That is a limit. But I told them, you have a very strict limit. So, and I had people argue with me. And I'd look at their email and say, do you really need this email that says, I'll meet you at 12 for lunch from 4 years ago? Well, I suppose I could get rid of that one. I suppose you could.
Yeah.
And I see 11 of those just on this screen.
Yeah. Well, we'd always have problems with the graphic arts departments inside of large companies because that was our main support side. And typically they would give, the IT would give people 5 or 10 megs of disk space, which is thousands of emails.
Right.
That doesn't even fit one high-res picture that the graphic department needs to build that brochure right. you want us to do. So, well, how much do you need? How about a terabyte?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Well, and I get it for files. I do get it for files.
Yep.
So we had faculty, for example, who were writing papers mm-hmm. or books.
Yeah.
And they want to keep three versions at least back. And I get that.
Oh, yeah.
Because there's editing and going back.
That's critical. Yeah. We preach it all the time. Back up, back up, back up.
Right. And I get that. So they have version one, version two, version three.
Mm-hmm.
I get that. And so we always made sure they had enough disk space. But the other problem was they would then email those files to their editors, who would then make corrections and email them back.
Mm-hmm.
So you've got one copy in the files. You've got one copy in sent mail.
Yeah.
You've got a third copy in the mail that comes back from the editor. And these are book length files with lots and lots of illustrations. So you might not need three copies of every version. Maybe you can live with one, particularly after the book is published.
Yep.
Oh, hell yeah.
We had one customer that sent out a giant file before they went on vacation and then turned on their out-of-office reply without realizing they were on a distribution list. So the distribution list got this giant file and sent a message back saying, "This is too big, I can't take it." His out-of-office sent a message saying, "I'm out of my office," and attached the same message again. And then the server sent it back saying, "This is too big, I can't take it." And it went back and forth and back and forth until the...
At computer speed,
so like 5 minutes. Then the server hard drive filled up and the mail server crashed.
And that's when you hear about it.
Yep. Oh, the phone rings off the hook.
You can lose anything else on a network. Like I said, I was a systems administrator, so I had all kinds of tripwires and alarms and things all set. I never bothered with any of that for email because email wouldn't be down 8 seconds and the phone would ring.
Oh, yeah.
Every single time. Of course, I set them, but I never bothered to look at them because I would hear as the alarm was going off.
You had your alarm.
Everybody in the building was my alarm. Exactly right.
Built in. Yeah.
Exactly right.
Well, and so this week I was trying to research something and I kept getting hits on Reddit. So I went to Reddit and I was getting errors. Is Reddit down? Reddit can't be down. So I went to Down Detector. Yeah, Reddit was down.
Reddit was down. Yeah.
For like an hour. Just that 1 hour I was trying to research something.
I was in the middle of a discussion with somebody on Reddit. About Python, as a matter of fact, but all of a sudden it was down for an hour, and when it came back, the guy said, "How come you didn't answer me? Reddit was down. How am I supposed to answer you on Reddit when Reddit is down?
It's the front page of the internet. You should know it was down.
That's exactly right.
Because you were probably complaining too. You couldn't
That's
get onto your Reddit.
The front page of the internet.
Yeah.
Man, oh man, when Reddit goes down or Twitter goes down or Facebook goes down, people get insane.
Yeah.
They get insane. They
go back to work.
Right.
Well, that's the thing. They don't know how to act. Like I say, you can ride around, like I've said, in the past year, ride around or just going to restaurants or whatever now, you'll see most folks are face down into their phone.
Yep. It's the zombie apocalypse.
Yeah, they walk around.
At all.
You go by. I drive around. Go by bus stops. Everybody's face deep into their phone.
I saw a picture the other day. It was cute. It was like a cafe or something, and it was kid with a phone, kid with a phone, kid with a phone, old guy with a newspaper, kid with a phone, kid with a phone.
I have seen people walk into light poles. And then walk right out in the middle of traffic because they're not paying attention.
What makes me sad is, before this pandemic, Sandy and I go to a restaurant and you'd see other folks in there and say there was a family of four. Instead of sitting there spending the time talking to each other, all four of them are face deep into their phones, texting it. It's like, what's wrong with our society? You know, you've forgotten how to even talk to family members?
Right, right.
That's pretty sad. I mean, you know, I love the inventions, you know, don't get me wrong. You know, they're great, but...
We always had a deal at our house for family supper, which was every night, by the way.
Okay,
no cell phones. If you needed, like, for example, once or twice, I would say, I'm on call. You know, I'm the guy on call, so I have to have my cell phone on. And that's okay, because A, it's rare, and B, I let everybody know ahead of time. And C, it's not, what was on Reddit just now? What was on Twitter? Yeah. You know, so.
Oh, my dad used to, when we were growing up as kids, didn't like anybody calling during the dinner hour.
Yep.
And he'd go, you know, the phone ring. And my sister was going to grab me. Sit back down. He'd go over the phone. Hello? Yeah, she's here. And then hang up.
Answered the question.
That's it, right, exactly right.
And she goes, who was that? They asked for you and they wanted to know if you were here. And I told them yes, but you're eating.
Yep. My dad was on call for his job for many, many years. And so if the phone rang, we all knew, do not answer the phone. Dad will get it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And if it's not for him, he will decide.
Yeah.
if anybody gets the talk.
Yep.
Kids today have no idea. We used to have one phone in the house.
Yeah.
And when it rang, you didn't know who was calling.
Yeah. And you had to go to the phone.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And unless you were one of those fancy houses that had that 25-foot extension cord on the handset in the kitchen.
Oh, no. We were Italian. We had an extension cord so that mom could talk on the phone and reach the sink,
yep.
the stove, the refrigerator,
and
everything in the kitchen.
The high-class phones, houses were two phones in a home, one downstairs and one upstairs.
I'll tell you what I had before we go to the phone.
Yeah.
I'll tell you what I had in my house. Toward the end of her life, my mother was in a hospital bed in our living room for several years. And the problem was, if I was in the bathroom, she would try to get up to answer the phone. I'm not even going to go into the mess that would cause. But I actually had a phone put in the bathroom.
No, so just smart move.
Protect the phone off the hook when you go to the bathroom.
I'm not that smart.
Yeah. And well, because then it would give that screeching tone.
Right, right.
Yeah.
And she would try to get up and do that. So anyway, let's go to the phones. Speaking of phones, our next caller is Larry from Rochester, New York. What's up, Larry?
I was just wondering if you had any extra insight as to why we have this chip shortage now. I tried to buy a new camera the other day, and I can't even buy that because there are no chips.
Same with car dealers and everybody
else. Cat food, dog food has been short supply too. Yeah, everything has been short supply because most of the factories were shut down for almost a year.
Right. It's all about the COVID.
Yeah, and I mean, even car manufacturers are hurting right now. They've got literally hundreds of thousands of vehicles sitting because they don't waiting for chips that control the inner workings of a car now.
Yeah, but Larry, it is all about COVID. So many factories had to shut down for months and months at a time. And don't forget, for years, all of these places have lived on JIT, just-in-time manufacturing. Mm-hmm. I need 200,000 chips on Thursday, so I ask for them on Tuesday. They make them on Wednesday. We get them on Thursday and put them in our devices. So nobody has inventory sitting around.
Yeah, I just read a story this morning that Ford has 5,000 pickup trucks sitting at the Kentucky Speedway outside the manufacturing plant waiting for parts.
You go by most dealerships and, the lots are pretty barren because they're not getting new cars.
Comparatively, yeah, they really are.
They're not getting new cars in right now.
You can see a lot of used cars, but not new cars. Yep. So that's the thing, Larry. It's all about COVID, and now that... a lot of places are beginning to open up. We should see some of that stuff start to loosen up.
But a lot, we're seeing a lot of prices go up, right. Supply and demand, because the demand is so high and the supply is so small. The prices have been going up on a lot of things.
Did you see there was one ad I had to laugh at on Facebook? This guy has 20 sheets of plywood,
yeah.
And he'll trade anybody for a Corvette.
No low balls. I know what I got.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. But that's it, Larry. It's all about COVID. Sorry.
Okay. I guess the reason I ask is I'm about to build a Linux box.
Yeah.
And I could shoot myself. I didn't buy the RAM when I should have bought it. And I went back now. First, it was back ordered. And when it finally got on, it's 75% higher.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah.
I was just wondering. I guess I hadn't factored in COVID, but as usual, you guys got the answers.
Thank you, Larry.
All right. Thanks. Have a good one.
We've seen
have fun.
We've seen the same thing in the hobby community, where cost of balsa has been skyrocketing, and so trying to get your kits to build things while we're stuck at home, it was one of the hobbies. People started getting back into building models. And
I was on Newegg looking to buy some stuff the other day, and man, I can get every cable on the planet and keyboards and, you know, stuff like that. Go ahead, find a motherboard. I dare you.
If it has anything to do with silicone and chips and everything else,
I mean, a good one. You can buy all the $5 motherboards.
Yeah.
Yeah, but that isn't going to get you much,
right?
I was on Banggood and saw this airplane.
Oh, of course you did.
So it's $150, but it's $30 shipping. But then I go to a site in California where it's $110 and $20 shipping.
Ooh.
But now, which one is going to ship sooner?
Oh, absolutely, California.
Yeah,
they could walk it from California faster than you'll get it from Banggood.
Well, Banggood, I picked U.S. warehouse.
Oh, yeah.
Shipping is higher, but delivery is quicker.
Yeah.
Then the Chinese warehouse said, and when I hit the Chinese one, it says 6 months. Do you know that the, 18,000 containers on the Ever Given are still stuck in Suez?
Yeah.
Because no one from the company is paying the fine?
Yes.
So maybe that's where all of Larry's chips are.
Yeah, exactly.
Could
right
be on
well,
that container.
Yeah. I've said this before, but Banggood and AliExpress.
Yep.
I love ordering for them because it takes so long to get to you that it's kind of a, surprise.
Yeah.
You know, past you bought something for
future. You just have to order everything every week, then there's always something showing up.
Yeah, that's not a good idea.
You're on first name basis with the delivery driver.
Yeah, right. We already are, because we get coffee deliveries every week. All right, that music tells us that we have wasted an hour of our lives together. But don't go away, there's a whole nother hour of the longest running computer show in the known universe coming your way. Huh, that must mean it's Soundbites. If you're on the line, please stay on the line. We will get to you when we come back. If you're not on the line, why not? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free, 1-800-790-0415. We'll be right back with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It's 59 minutes after the hour. It's Soundbites. It's member-supported. Jazz 90.1. See you on the other side.
Computer talk you can understand. More Sound Bites is next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
WGMC Greece, Rochester.
A public service of the Greece Central School District.
Jazz 90.1.
On Instagram at WGMC Jazz 901.
Welcome back to America's longest-running computer show, Sound Bites, on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm still Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
Unbelievable. You guys couldn't get any different?
Nope. Well, we were can't do any better than this, not this age.
I guess so. It's 6 minutes after the hour. We are Sound Bites. We have Roger from Rochester, New York on the line. Hi, Roger. What's up?
Hi there. I was just curious, and you may or may not, if any of the three of you ever heard of a program called Reaper? It's an audio editor. It's supposed to be very, very good. I tried to download it and get it to work. I had a heck of a time trying to get it. I didn't even pay someone if they could help me get it working.
Let's try that one. I use Audacity, which is free and open source, which is nice.
Yeah, this is not free, but it's not bad. It's $60, $70, but it's supposed to be really, really good for doing audio editing, taking out gaps and ahs and stuff like that.
Right, right. What operating system are you trying to install it on?
10.
Windows 10. And what sort of error are you having?
I can't get it to recognize my mic and my mixer.
Oh, but it installs okay.
Yeah, I got it all installed. But
yeah.
I've been screwing around with it for quite a while, and I have not managed to beat the thing yet. But it's supposed to be really good. I know others have used it, but not well enough to ask them to help me with it. So I just wondered if anybody, I'd gladly call someone in TeamViewer or get someone to help me to get this stupid thing up and running. Once it's up,
it looks like it looks like they have training videos and an online forum on their website as a place to at least post a question.
Sorry, yeah.
But I see the lot even in YouTube. Just go to YouTube and search for the thing you're looking for, and you'll probably find hundreds of videos of people showing something.
Okay.
One thing I would say is go back a step, and does Windows recognize your audio devices?
Say, yeah.
Yes. I use it all the time. I run half a dozen Zoom calls a week, and I'm running a
Ding. Yep.
One of the issues with Zoom is it does not release your audio and video when you end a call.
Oh, yeah, I know. Yeah.
So you need to reboot after a Zoom call.
Yeah, Zoom doesn't let go of the camera and mic.
I don't know if they have done that. Yeah. Because, as I say, I'm running a Mackie mixer, and because I'm running a Shure mic for a little better quality.
Right, right, right. Now, that's fine, but the problem with Zoom is that it does not properly release any of the audio or video. And we find that with lots and lots of people. I'm working with a company called Mastermind Lounge, and we do video conferencing as well. And we find that if somebody's been on a Zoom conference, they have a whole lot of trouble getting on a Mastermind session because Zoom just doesn't let go.
Okay, sounds good. I'll try. That's easy to do.
Yeah, give that a try. See what happens.
Because I don't know if I've ever. I'm not real good about turning off my computer. It usually stays on for months.
Right, no.
No,
I get that.
Just have it reboot.
Yeah,
but also go into Zoom and look through the setup
I'm very comfortable in Zoom and how to run it.
Go through the Zoom setup and make sure that it is not set to start automatically on reboot.
Okay. Yeah.
Because it tries to run back there to be convenient, because you're only going to ever use Zoom.
Right. And again, you run into the problem where it owns all the audio and video.
Okay. Sounds good. Thank you.
Okie doke. Thanks.
I appreciate it.
Yep. Bye-bye. Yeah, Zoom is a good but interesting program.
That Chinese curse, may you live in interesting times.
Yeah, exactly. We see a lot of issues with Zoom, the insecurity, the 40-minute limit, the fact that it doesn't let go of anything when it's done, all that stuff.
It's not uncommon for so many programs to assume they are the only program of its type. And so it locks out anything else. So heaven forbid you're trying to use a different, Google Meet or Microsoft Teams or one of the other Mastermind Lounge, one of the other video conferencing softwares.
Right.
You're only ever going to use Zoom, so Zoom grabs everything.
Right, and never lets go. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Mike from Batavia, New York. Hi, Mike. What's up?
Hi, guys. Good show.
Thanks.
Question, does the Chrome OS support dual monitors?
Yes.
It does?
Okay. Yes. If you are running a Chromebook, the laptop, one of those monitors will be the laptop monitor. But you can add a monitor, an external HDMI monitor, without a problem. If you are running a Chrome box, you can plug up to two, I think it's only two, monitors to it.
Okay, okay. So my, from what I can see, my Chromebook does not have a micro HDMI port on it.
Does it have HDMI?
Or USB or DisplayPort? What ports does it have?
It has USB-C in it, you know, in it, and I haven't really investigated the other ports. I mean, you know, I wasn't sure. You know,
yeah, so you could use a USB-C monitor, or you could use a USB-C to VGA or HDMI adapter.
What model Chromebook do you have?
Oh, I don't know. The wife uses it more than I do.
Okay, well, my point was you may have one and just not recognize it as such because there's only been about 300 different connectors.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I think probably the USB-C is probably the one that's
right,
you know, for the monitor. Okay, thank you.
Yep.
All right, thanks.
And we're seeing a lot of computers are now standardizing on USB-C because it's kind of the everything port, and it supports all of the other protocols too. So it's easier to make just one port.
My Asus Flip here also has only USB-C.
Yep. At least I have four ports, but I still needed a hub because I need more than four things plugged in.
I only have the two, so I would need a hub if I were plugging in anything. But again, USB-C is also a smaller connector.
Yep.
And everybody, you know, God forbid it's not as thin as possible anymore.
Well, the really nice thing about Type-C connectors is that they're reversible. Because that's the whole joke on Type-A.
Yeah.
You can't get your flash drive plugged into the computer. So you try it the one way, you flip it over, try it the second way, and it doesn't fit. You trip it over, try it the third way, and it fits.
Yeah. It's always true.
Yep.
Yeah.
All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Sam from Irondequoit, New York. Hi, Sam. What's up?
Well, remember years ago when you could download an old Windows program with old DLLs, install it on your Windows thing, and it would make a mess of it because there were old DLLs.
Right.
Could that be a clue? I don't know. Does Android use anything like DLLs or libraries? And is that how Google is breaking cameras on people's Pixel phones and others?
I don't believe Apple, Google is breaking Pixel phones.
Well, you don't always know if you look at reviews. When you look at the updates, like, for example, Google Camera, 3 years ago, I saw people saying, ever since the last update, my camera no longer works, or the back camera takes bad pictures, can't fix it, nothing works. Google had no answers for them. And it's happening again. And luckily, I wait to do updates and let other people suffer, but how does that happen?
Bad programming.
Yeah, that's mostly just bad programming. Mm-hmm. It has nothing to do with any malicious.
We've sort of entered an area called computational photography, that the lens and the sensor are almost insignificant now because software takes over processing the photo. But at some of the higher end phones, they have a really good sensor and really good lens and really good software. So they often can take a better photo than another phone that may not have as good a sensor because they don't have as good a software. So we're seeing these weird things where this one phone may have a 40 megapixel count, but it takes worse pictures than this other phone that has a 12 megapixel count because the software's better.
One thing you might have to do to fix this is clear the data cache of the camera itself.
Yeah, that's what they suggested. I don't have the problem, but if you go to reviews for the update, you can tell it reviews from my model.
Right. One of the issues is that Google has done a pretty amazing job in their software in making the camera better than it actually is.
Mm-hmm.
The problem with that is that it's software and some engineer had to create that and may not have done a great job. And in particular, they're finding that one of the things that wasn't well done was getting rid of the old settings in the cache. So if people go in and clear the cache and let it all start all over again, it generally fixes the issue.
Yeah, generally. I'd love to update for the new features, but there are people who are now saying it crashes the camera every single time. I've tried everything they suggested. Nothing works, and now they don't have a camera.
So, then you wait for the next update to come out or downgrade to the previous update.
Yeah, that's what they suggest. But anyway, all right.
So it's what Nick said earlier about how do we still have buffer overflows and integer overruns, and because we've gone into speed over quality. We want to get the software out as fast as we can, and so quality control suffers, and bug fixes are just assumed. It's we'll ship it now, and then we'll release a patch next month.
Right.
Great. That's assuming people don't switch brands. So.
Yeah.
Anyway,
right.
All right. Have a good one.
All right. Thanks. You too. Have fun.
And so we joke, listening to Security Now with Steve Gibson, you know, he writes everything in hand-coded assembler. So it takes 6 years to write a benchmarking program because he does it right.
Right.
He doesn't do it fast. He does it right. And there actually is unfortunately a new concept in software guaranteed. Software can be provably correct, as in a mathematical proof, and not just we write this code and it works, we'll ship it. And that's how we end up with buffer overruns and integer overflows and sanitize your inputs.
Right.
And because that sometimes things just are easier to release now and then we'll come up with a fix later.
And, you know, when you're writing
percentages.
And when you're writing software for yourself, that's fine.
Yep.
Yeah.
But when you're writing software for 100 million other people, maybe not so much.
Yeah. And there's 20 other people on your team, and if you don't get this code in by tomorrow, there'll be 19 other people on the team.
Yeah, exactly. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is James from Rochester, New York. What's up, James?
Oh, hello. I'm buying a new laptop, and my old one was a Toshiba with the Windows 7. What is the difference of the operating systems of Edge versus Chrome, which a new one? The new laptop is going to have Edge.
Edge is a web browser currently based on Chromium, so
there's very little difference.
Yeah.
Either one is fine. It depends on whether you want to send your data to Microsoft or to Google.
Yeah, I want to keep everything as much the same as possible, and I'm used to using Chrome. Obviously, I'm going from Windows 7 to Windows 10.
Well, the good news is Chrome works the same on both 7 and 10. So if you were to, if you have signed into Chrome on 7, and set it up to save everything out to the web. Then you sign on to Chrome in 10 and wait a few minutes. All your bookmarks will come down. All your everything will come down.
Yeah.
And it'll essentially look like it did on Windows 7.
Which is what I want. I want to keep everything as simple as possible. What is Edge?
Edge is Microsoft's own web browser.
Replaced Internet Explorer.
Right. It replaced Internet Explorer, and for a while it was their own code, only it was so incredibly lousy that they just gave up and downloaded and rebranded Chromium, which is the basis of the Chrome browser. So
it has a blue tint to it instead of the four color tint that Chrome does.
Right, that's basically the difference.
Yeah.
So you can download Chrome to a Windows 10 machine. I don't know if it's in the store, in their app store.
Yeah,
I
just go to the website and download.
They even made a Mac version of it.
Yeah.
So if you can run Microsoft Edge on your Mac if you really want to.
All one person who does that.
Yeah.
And probably for support purposes.
Yeah. Well, it's that tech support guy that tells you must be running Microsoft browser. Okay, I will. It still doesn't work.
Right.
Yeah. How hard is it when I buy a new laptop, like from Best Buy, I'm buying a real good one, and I bring it home, they offer a service where they will transfer everything from the old one to the new one. How hard is it for me to transfer what I have on my old Toshiba to the new laptop when I bring it home, or is it difficult?
It's more difficult than it should be because Microsoft stopped including the file settings and transfer wizard. Mm-hmm. And they recommend that you buy Laplink, and they give you a discount on buying Laplink.
Yeah, see, I'm not good at that stuff. I'm going to let them do it.
Yeah, let them do it, but check to make sure they moved everything.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So make a list of all of your folders, and then look in them to make sure there's stuff in there, and spot check a file in each one before you take that machine away.
Don't erase the old machine until you're sure everything copied.
No, I'm keeping the old machine.
Yeah.
And will they both have the stuff on it, or one?
Yeah, no. Copy it over from one to the other, it'll exist on both.
Assuming they copy and not move,
right? Tell them you want it to copy, not move.
Most of the time, it's a copy anyway.
Yeah, just make sure you tell them that.
Yeah, I wouldn't assume, because you'll become the first three letters of that word.
Right.
Yes, copy, not move. That's critical. One other thing, I use Kaspersky security on my old machine. Do these new machines, I haven't decided what I'm getting yet, do they come with any, like, 30-day securities?
Well, they do. They come with Windows Defender, but we just had a news item about Windows Defender, so you might want to move.
Some of these might also have, like, Norton on it and that, too.
Yeah, you have to be careful. You have to be careful that it is a trial and it expires quickly.
Right.
And one of the dangers of using one of the well-known antivirus softwares is the bad guys don't release a virus until it gets past the well-known antivirus companies.
Oh. Okay.
So sometimes you want to go with a smaller one, like, you know, Avast or Pando or Clam.
I've had the Kaspersky for years, and that's all I use, and I've never had a problem.
Then you should probably continue to use that. It is a good piece of software.
Yeah, I've zero problems, and I don't put anything else on, just that, and I've been very good with it.
Yep.
Okay, well, thank you so much. I appreciate your knowledge.
Thank you. Have fun.
Okay.
Yeah, as we said earlier, a lot of keeping yourself safe on the internet is be wary. Don't believe ads that say you need to install this software. You know, don't click on random things that sound interesting, but who knows what they are or where they come from.
That's what I thought.
Yeah. It's important to be aware of those things. It's important to do whatever you have to do and can do to make your system as secure as possible.
And there are a lot of programs besides Laplink for copying files between PCs, but that just happens to be the one that Microsoft suggests you get to. With the Apple, it's built in. In fact, Apple has a Microsoft Windows program. So if you're moving from Windows to Mac, you download the Apple software on your Windows PC, and it copies everything over to your Mac.
Very nice. Will it copy over to another PC?
No.
Of course not. All right.
Actually, well, I don't know. You run it on both sides. Does it ask if this is the source or target? It may.
Our next caller is Tom from Brighton, New York. Hiya, Tom. What's up?
Hi. Yeah. Good afternoon. So, actually, you were just mentioning a few moments ago, you were mentioning Avast, and you seem to think pretty well of it. I used to think well of it, too. But for a while now, I've had this problem with one of my laptops where it was running slow. So I went to
task manager?
That's the task manager. So I was looking in there, and there were multiple instances of various Avast programs, utilities that were running, the replications of the same thing. And actually, the truth is, I actually uninstalled Avast a while ago. In spite of that, I still see these multiple instances.
Well, then you didn't uninstall it properly, for sure.
Well, obviously, yeah. So could it be a virus, another virus? Could it be malware? Is it just something bad that Avast is doing?
It's the uninstallers that don't work right.
Yeah. Have you tried using Revo uninstaller?
I did at one point. Yes, I did. So it was still there. And as I say, there are the exact same instance is replicated sometimes three or four times.
It may have spawned to different processes to scan different parts of the directory simultaneously.
Yeah. As I say, I don't run Avast. It's something which I thought I had uninstalled.
Depending on how you uninstalled it, it may not have done so properly.
You may have to use Revo's deep clean, what do they call it, deep scan?
Yeah. Deep scan.
Right. The advanced mode.
Avast itself is a reputable company.
Absolutely.
Now, Avast and AVG, one bought the other, but I can't find out who, because they're still both being distributed separately.
Right. Okay. All right, then I'll just have to do what you said with Revo and its style store.
Yeah, thanks, sorry. Yep.
Yep.
Yeah, because they still got the special going on, I believe, for, I think it's 2 years of Revo One Installer. I mean, I love that program. It does such a great job of, you know, going through and removing everything, you know, I mean, down into the subdirectories and everything else and cleaning up the registry. It just keeps your machine running far more efficient than just using Windows, the uninstaller program, which just turns a bit off and leaves it all those remnants still in there, which now your machine, you keep doing, you know, if you're installing and uninstalling and then reinstalling, it just keeps adding to the registry and making your machine, in a sense, I mean, granted, it's microseconds, but it's still bogging down your machine and making it less efficient to run.
A microsecond here, a microsecond there, it all adds up in the end.
Mm-hmm. Exactly right. Yeah.
Yeah, you're just bogging it down unnecessarily. Yeah. Just take the time. You know, I mean, a lot of folks, they're in such a hurry. Just like I say, you know, a lot of folks get click happy.
Right.
I just noticed that my video broadcaster here is taking up 115% of my CPU cycles.
Nice. Whoa. That's magic right
there.
Yeah,
115.
I think I said this on the air one time. I scan my system every night for viruses just because that's who I am. And it was taking 12 hours. And I've got SSDs. I realized that when I set up my excludes,
mm-hmm.
I did not exclude my P drive, which is out on the web and is an exact duplicate of my entire hard drive. So I was not only scanning my whole hard drive twice, but I was also doing it at network and P drive speeds rather than the SSD speed on my machine. So I excluded that from the list, as I should have.
Yeah.
And I went from 12 and a half hours of
scanning
to just over 2. Which, you know, it meant that, you know, I started my scan at 3 in the morning, so most of the day when I was working, it was still scanning in the background and slowing things down a little bit. It's like I bought a new machine. All right, that music tells us that it's time for a break. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It's 29 minutes after the hour. It's Sound Bites. Don't forget to vote in the poll right here at member-supported Jazz 90.1. We will see you on the other side.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And 35 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites, and we have Dennis from Rochester, New York on the line. Hiya, Dennis. What's up?
Hi, guys. Chromebook.
Yeah.
I got a new Chromebook back in January because my 7-year-old HP is sort of getting long in the tooth. And I didn't need all that power now that I'm retired for working at home and everything. I just need enough surf the web and check emails and all that good stuff. And,
yep.
I got an HP 360. It's got 8 gigs of RAM and 128 gigs on a SSD. Anyway, I was playing with it at the beginning, and then I started using it seriously, and then things started happening. Mainly, I'd be in the middle of something, right? I'd be typing or whatever, and the screen and everything would just freeze up. And I've got it hooked up to an external monitor, and I've got a Bluetooth mouse and a keyboard. You know, arthritic hands don't like touchpads too much anyway. So it would lock up, I'd open up the cover, and it'd be like the power's off, or it's asleep. But I'd have to hit the refresh and the power buttons,
mm-hmm.
and it would come back to life. And whatever I was into was gone. So, and it would do this like once a day. Which kind of a pain in the neck, but what's going on? I didn't see anything online about it. After about 2 weeks of this, all of a sudden I would like move the mouse, the cursor would just sit there. And then like 15 seconds later it would move. Same with the keyboard. I type, nothing would happen. And like 15 seconds later, you know, I'd get a whole bunch of Y's or whatever. Okay, so
okay,
I disconnected the Bluetooth devices. I rebooted. Just used the touchpad, just to
right,
eliminate those two things. Rebooted, and it came up. And for about maybe 30 seconds, using the touchpad and the internal keyboard, it worked. And then all of a sudden, I had the same problem, even with the touchpad,
okay,
touchscreen, and the internal keyboard.
Okay, what you need to do, try this. There's a couple of things it could be. It could be a hardware issue, in which case you got to send the Chromebook back, but it sounds like it would still be under warranty if you bought it in January.
That's what HP wants me to do.
Yeah. The other thing you could try before you do that, however, is first make sure you've got backup copies of all of the data you've got on that machine.
Yes.
And then power wash it.
Yeah, I power washed it twice.
Okay. Then, yeah, it's definitely hardware. Send it back.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Send it back. Don't, you know,
there's no point in screwing around with it if it's under warranty. I know you'll be without it for a week, but don't. If the aggravation is not worth it, go do it.
The one thing I'm a little bit concerned about, well, two things I'm concerned about. One, I'm going to send it back, and they're not going to be able to reproduce the problem because right now it's operating okay. All right? Outside of this particular, that precursor where the screen just freezes and I can bring it back to life. So it's not until I've been working with it for like maybe 5, 6, 7, 8 days when this problem...
That's still in all. There's an issue. And
so work with it for 6 days and then send it.
So let me ask you another question. Do you leave it on all the time?
No, not really.
Okay.
No. Yeah, I'd just go ahead and send it back because 10 to 1 odds, you know... They're going to, you know, once you send it in, you're going to send the report in on what it's doing, and they're just going to go ahead and send you out another one and then check it, you know, when they get time.
And I would suggest that one of the things you do is, since the problem happened 30 seconds after using the internal keyboard and mouse, video it. Unplug all that stuff, start it up, video it, boom, boom, boom. Send that to tech support.
Show them
what's happening.
Along with the file. Yeah.
All right. Now, one more question. Sending it back. Okay. How can I make sure, I know it's reputable firm and everything, but there's data. I got all those passwords on.
Erase it before you send it in.
Power wash it before you send it back.
Okay.
Just to be safe, but yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, just the last thing you do before you put it in the box and send it back is power wash it again. And don't turn it back on. Don't put your username and password in and just send it back.
Yeah. Nuke it from orbit. Okay. It's the only way to be sure.
It's the only way to be sure.
All right, now I'll see what happens. I just hope that they use it enough that it's just kind of weird that this problem goes away after you power wash it and then all of a sudden it comes back. It just warms up. You
it
know?
Really but, sounds what, like a hardware issue
yeah,
more
it
than
does.
Anything else.
And it's just kind of crazy.
No, don't drive yourself nuts. You know, like you say, take advantage of it while it's under warranty. Because if you milk it along too long, all of a sudden they're going to say, well, sorry, you know, if you had sent it in when we told you, we'd handle it.
Yep.
Okay.
Leave it for the technicians to get confused and annoyed by it.
Right. Yeah.
I hate intermittent problems that are so hard to find.
And as we were saying earlier, the good thing about a Chromebook is you get a new one. You use the same username and password, and all your stuff comes back.
Yeah, everything's back, so that's the good thing. Well, I still got my PC. It still kind of works. I mean, I can still use. I won't be without.
Yeah, there you go. Do it today. Pack it up.
Okay.
Power wash it. Pack it up. Send it out. You're done. Why aggravate yourself?
Yep.
Do it.
All right. I just wanted a second opinion, guys.
Yeah, well, there you go. Three more opinions, actually. Yeah, they're all the same.
Yeah, let us know how you make out.
All right. Thanks a lot, guys. Appreciate it. Have a good one.
Thanks, Dennis. Bye-bye. You too. Yeah, don't. Just don't. As long as it's under warranty, let them deal with it. That's why you have a warranty.
Yeah. And it, you know, from the technician side, it's always annoying when a customer comes in and says the cursor goes nuts. Okay, how often? Well, it did it once.
Yeah.
You had the computer for 3 months and it did it once. I'm not going to be able to find that.
Right. But if it happens every 30 seconds.
Yeah, if it does it once a minute, that I could probably find.
But even if, you know, right, excuse me, you know, if it's happening right now, say every 4 to 5 days, right, that's for right now. And if he keeps letting it go.
If it's a hardware problem, yeah.
Yeah, it's just going to get worse. It's not going to all of a sudden heal itself and, you know, magically start working better. It's only going to get worse. And it could get them towards the end of the warranty, because who knows how long. Nowadays, you know, they don't want to put a warranty too long on these things.
Right.
That's the sad part of it, because we've become a disposable society.
And honestly, in general, and this is in general, the sooner you send something back for that kind of problem, the more likely they are to just say, yep, it's clearly a problem.
Mm-hmm.
If you, like Steve said, if you wait till the day before the warranty expires, they're going to think,
Do it now while they sit there and are asking you to send it in, especially if they're telling you, go ahead, send it on it.
Right.
All right, fine.
Do it. Send it in.
Yeah. Let them and you get a different one.
One.
I did that with this. If you guys remember, the first one wouldn't stay turned off.
Yeah, I remember. Yeah, you were having all kinds of issues.
Yeah, so I called them and I said, this is my issue. They said, send it back. Yeah. I sent it back. They sent me a new one. No question. No problem. And I know it was a different one because one of the stickers is in a slightly different place.
I
didn't notice that.
One thing I did one time because I had to send one back one time. Just on the bottom, you know how they always have the labels?
Yeah.
I just took a Sharpie.
Yeah.
And just put a little dot.
Oh, yeah.
In the corner of one of the labels. So when they sent it back, the first thing I did, no lie, pulled it out, looked it out. Yep, it's a different one.
Yep.
That's the way I knew. Yeah. I mean, it's just a simple thing. It wasn't like I'm writing all over the thing. It was just one little tiny dot from a Sharpie.
Yep.
On it. And
yeah. Well, this version has the serial number etched into the bottom. So I knew that at the very least they had to replace the back. But yeah. Yeah, so people in general, this is something we've always said. If you're going to get a laptop, get the extended warranty, because someday we'll be carrying them around again. Yeah. They won't just be sitting on a desk.
Well, see, that was one of the surprising benefits of the lockdown is that we weren't getting last minute calls from students saying I'm leaving for school tomorrow and I need my computer fixed.
Yeah. Right.
We thought that was bad, leaving tomorrow, until we had a woman come in and said, my plane leaves in an hour. Can you fix my computer now?
No. Thank you for coming in. Better.
Yes, we can, but without you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Where are you moving? Where are you going to? We'll mail it to you.
Your parents can ship it to you.
Yeah. No, but if you're getting a laptop, get the extended warranty because you will bang it around. And as we've said before, the hinges are often a weak point, as is the display ribbon that runs through the hinge and all of that stuff. So particularly on a laptop, you want the extended warranty. But it never hurts to get the extended warranty on all your devices.
Yeah.
Sometimes, you know, I tend to buy a lot of refurbished devices because they come with a warranty. I get them from reputable places and they come with a warranty. Now, I bought my desktop, which is my, you know, daily driver. I bought as a refurb from Woot.
Mm-hmm.
It's a Dell. It came with a Dell warranty. Dell is the one who refurbed it. and it's run great for the last, what, 3.5 years?
We get asked all the time about buying refurbed because they're cheaper.
Right.
And the question is always, what's the warranty behind it? And the big unknown is, why was it refurbed?
Right.
Was it a floor model that they boxed up and decided to sell again? Or was it something the customer returned because they had trouble with it? Yeah, it's been refurbed. Yeah, it's working now, but it already has a history of trouble.
Right.
And so that warranty becomes extra good. It used to be refurbs only would have like a 90-day warranty, but now most companies are giving it a full warranty.
Right. And that's what I insist on,
yeah,
too. I always make sure I get a warranty. And then I add the extra warranty.
Yep.
You know, 3 years of warranty for $36 is,
yep,
quite a good deal.
Yeah, that's dirt cheap.
And it also helps if you know how to fix the computer yourself, too.
Right, 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 right. But knowing that you've got that backup, that safety,
yep,
net, and, mm-hmm, I have never felt guilty about using it. I paid for it.
Yeah.
Use it. Same thing with Dennis. Use it. You paid for it, Dennis. Whether you paid extra or you paid for it when, yep, you bought the machine.
Mm-hmm.
Trust me, it was not free.
Yeah.
They bank on the fact, literally, that,
yes,
that most people won't
take the time or effort.
Right, won't submit warranty claims.
Particularly if it's a smaller annoyance.
Yeah.
You know, I have to reboot it every 3 months.
Yeah.
Nope, it's not working right. Send it back.
And
send it back.
That's why a lot of companies are so quick to say, out of warranty, sorry.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, but, you know, when you bought it in January, it's still under warranty, unless,
yeah,
you got a terribly bad warranty.
I remember when we were doing custom-built PCs, the PC enclosure box we were buying was $15, including the power supply, and it had a 15-day warranty.
Yeah, I bet.
Well, we used to get it.
And that's
from
the day you bought it, not the day you sold it to somebody else.
No, it's from, right, the day we bought it, not the day we received it.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, I used to get that all the time. And folks says, well, do you sell refurbished stuff? No, I don't want somebody else's headache.
Right.
And they go, well, why not? You know, you could make some good money. And I'd say, yeah, and I could also earn a lot of headaches.
Yeah.
Because that's somebody else's issue that they don't always tell you the full story.
Yeah.
You know, it's like these car, you know, a car dealer in that, you know, used lot. They don't always tell you, well, this is going to need replacing and, yeah, that's kind of making some noise, but you should be okay.
Now,
yeah, no.
Ironically, pretty much every one of my devices except my router and my Raspberry Pis are refurbed.
Mm-hmm.
The only device I've ever had trouble with is this, and I bought it brand new. This is the one I had to send back. Okay.
Go figure. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, hey, it's...
But, you know, I made sure I had full warranty on all of those devices. And, oh, by the way, I have a thing that will remind me when the warranty is up. It's called Google Calendar.
Yeah.
I put a note in that says, you know, Elaine's computer's warranty is up in a week. So I know that when it's done, if there's an issue, we just buy her a new one. But it's got a 4-year warranty on it.
Mm-hmm.
And it honestly, at the end of 4 years,
it's served its
you're
life.
Ready.
Yeah, it's just
it
like,
owes us nothing.
Well, it's just like, you know, you can go also the extreme.
Right.
You know, I go in and when I say, got the rice cooker.
Yeah.
You know, $30, you want the warranty with that? No.
Yeah, for $30, no.
No.
I don't get a warranty on my Raspberry Pis.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, hello. Yeah. Usually anything $100 or less.
Yeah.
You want the warranty on that?
Yeah.
Why? I can buy another one probably next week on sale.
Right.
Cheaper.
And cheaper, right. Now, the only people who really don't need warranties are Mac people because they buy a whole new rig every year.
Yeah.
When the new models come out, God forbid they don't have the new model.
But you can't tell
sometimes. Still my heart.
That's the problem, isn't it?
Now we're glad the iMac's come in colors again because it's 2007 is when they went silver. And
yeah.
So for the last 14...
Yeah, I know. It's terrible.
No one's been able to tell you got the new model. No, they did go thin in 2012.
That's right. So,
yeah, so for 10 years, they've been looking exactly the same.
Exactly
whoopie fa doopy.
Well, and that's, I will say this. I love the idea of colorful hardware devices because I'm really sick of black and silver.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just sick of them.
You remember how grateful we were when they turned black and silver after being beige for so many years?
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Well, yes, they were great.
Yeah, but, well, because of beige and all that, you know, if there was smoke in the air or whatever, you know, like, especially in work environments, they discolor. It was a cheap plastic and it would sort of turn yellowish. And all that,
yeah.
I can remember
particularly
Kodak.
Back in the day when people smoked.
Yeah, and Kodak. I can remember a lot of the computers. All of a sudden, they were nice and, you know, white. But then, you know, with people smoking in the office and everything else, all of a sudden, these nice computers, desktop computers, started turning yellowish.
Yep. And now that they're more metallic, many of them,
yeah,
they would not absorb the nicotines and stuff that the old ones did. Because that plastic would just...
I can remember there was a couple computers that we got in, and I literally had to take them out to the garage and leave them out in the garage because, you know, folks brought them in for us to repair.
Sure, of course.
But until I was going to work on them, I took them out to the garage. They stunk so bad. And then you open them up, and you see all this tar and everything else just stuck to the fans in there because, you know, it's heat in there. And with the carcinogens and everything else, and it just was
nasty. We had a faculty member many, many, many years ago. I always took a pair of gloves to go work on his computer because he smoked. And it just caked everything.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't touch his keyboard, particularly his keyboard.
Well, that's why we have the bench outside.
Yeah,
with the air hose and the inline filter, because we take people's machines outside, and like you say, the birds loved us.
Yeah,
because we'd open up the cases and the keyboards, and you'd sit there, start blowing it out, and you'd see all these dust bunnies flowing all over the place. And one time, literally, I had a couple sparrows going around picking up the tufts of dust and everything else, flying off for nest.
One of our dogs was a fairly long-haired mix of various things, and we'd trim her every spring, and the birds would come down and pick up the stuff. And I realized that birds would hang around her because she was the smell of their nests.
Why do birds suddenly appear every time you are near?
Because she was in their nest.
Yeah.
Yeah. They grew up with her.
Mm-hmm.
And for all of you, check the vents on your desktops and laptops. Check the vents to see what's sunk in
them. Especially if you're folks that are still smoking. You know,
that
hasn't changed. I mean, you know, I understand, you know,
look, you do what you want.
Yeah.
But take a look at the inside of a computer someday and realize that your lungs are worse. I'm serious.
You're talking to the choir here. I mean,
you
the number... No, I only smoked for a year or two, but the amount of computers that we saw with the stuff in them and then the keyboards and everything else, the fans, at one point I had a case of fans, muffin fans, because it was easier to just swap them out.
Sure.
Mm-hmm.
Because they were so caked with the tires and nicotine and all that we just... said the heck with it. And matter of fact, it was Goldcrest is the place when he was
Goldcrest.
Down on St. Paul and we're moving. He's gone now.
Yeah.
But when he was still down there on St. Paul, he was moving and he had this case of these big 4-inch fans. And he said, make me an offer. I made him an offer and I says, fine, take them. And I was glad I did because we wound up going through all of them.
I bet.
Yeah, literally.
Sure. Often, of course, nowadays everything is disposable. But often when the issue is something like the tar and nicotine, mm-hmm. you just want to throw it out.
Yeah. And that could be why your computer's running slow because the heating system isn't working right. The heating system is. The cooling system isn't working right. And so the computer's running too hot, so the chips automatically slow down so they don't generate so much heat.
Well, the other thing, too, is with those fans, even on the CPU, you know, you get that tar and nicotine in there, and other stuff clogging it up, whether it's pet hair or anything else, it slows it down. It can jam it up. Even though it's a sealed bearing, it still gets gummed up. It's in the air.
Yep.
And then that can slow the fan down, which then causes the computer to overheat.
So many systems have a little widget you can run that tells you what the heat is in your system.
Mm-hmm.
If you have that in your system, you should be running it because you would be shocked at some of those things. I have one on my Raspberry Pis, and the 4 runs at 49 degrees Celsius all day, all night. The 3 runs at 81 most of the time because I'm also running folding at home. Doing searching for cures for various diseases. And it's, it runs at 81, and it slows down at 82.
My CPU average temperature right now is 176 Fahrenheit.
That's not bad. That's not bad.
No. I just keep my Raspberry. I've got the 2 running.
76 Celsius.
79. And I've got those down in the basement. I figure, nice, cool place. You know, I got the fans on both both the floors. Right.
I brought the monitor window open, and all the temperatures went up a little.
Yeah, of course they did. Of course they did. That's what they do. But yeah, so be aware of that stuff. Also, you know, look at your setup. Where is your desktop or laptop? If it's sitting on a sofa, you probably aren't getting any heat in there.
Yeah.
If it's sitting on a desk in the corner, you may not be getting any air circulation.
The big towers on the floor tend to get...
they're vacuum cleaners.
Right. Yeah. And they get also caked with dust from the vacuum cleaner, blowing it back in there.
Right.
Well, that's what I mean. They're a vacuum cleaner in that they suck it in from the front and blow it out the back. And all that dust and dirt and everything else from the floor, a lot of it settles inside the desktop.
Right.
The case.
Particularly if the desktop is up against the wall and that air really has nowhere to go mm-hmm. when it gets out the back.
Yeah.
There's blowback back into the machine and it overheats even more. So be aware of the airflow around your computer and be aware of the placement of your machine and what it's on. Also, a lot of people put them on poofy desk blotter, like you've got it on that thing.
Yeah.
That may not be great for air circulation. Now, it's designed to be a heat sink.
Yeah, it pulls the heat away.
But it's probably not good for circulation.
Yeah.
If that had a fan in it, it would be an issue.
Passive cooling versus active cooling.
Right. All right, we are done for another week. I want to thank Dave Enright, Steve Ray. I'm Nick Francesco. I want to thank everybody who called in. Like I said, we're done for another week. But, you know, we'll be back next week with a whole lot more of the longest-running computer show in the known universe, Soundbites, right here on the truly great and truly grateful to you that we are member-supported Jazz 90.1. It's 59 minutes after the hour. We're Soundbites. We'll see you in 166 hours. Be good to one another, will you?